Oh, I am so sorry, guys. I have been so busy this week. I don't know if I'm going to have enough time to record the podcast tonight.
No, it's been a week. It's been an absolute nightmare. What's going on? I'm so busy. I know, Nick, you're probably really busy too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fucking swamped. I'm fucking up to my eyeballs and
but
shit.
If it's okay with you, and we don't tell the audience, I think I have a way we can record the podcast without actually having to be here.
I'm listening.
I got this app that records your consciousness to your phone, and then I can just press play, and it will be able to interact with, say, your consciousnesses, should you choose to use the app.
Oh, well.
Oh, yeah. Wait, no, I heard about this.
Yeah.
It's brain share, right?
Yeah, brain share.
All right, I'm gonna download it right
now.
Yeah,
I'll download it too.
I'm uploading my consciousness, and great.
I'm gonna spend $4.99 for ad free just because the banner ads bug me.
Okay.
So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Let me just unlock that real quick.
All right.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. I'm gonna upload my consciousness.
I for some reason it's not my face ID is not working, so I'm just using the ad version. Hopefully that's all right. So I'm just going to put this next to the mic, and I guess I'll see you guys next week. Okay.
Yeah. See you next week.
Mine's ready to go too. So I'll just put mine next to the
mic. Yeah. Mine's,
Matt, you ready to go?
Yeah. Mine's hooked up into my audio interface. So here we go. Let's go.
Okay.
Hello and welcome to Get Played. Hello, Nick. Hello, Matt. How are you?
Hi, it's me, Weiger. I feel the same.
Hello, everyone. Good to see you all here on the Internet Podcast.
Before we get started, some news. It seems like new games are always coming out. I can't wait to play them. I, for one. Ha ha.
Wait, guys, I thought we were going to use the apps. When are you guys... Are we... Because I'm...
Oh,
I thought we were all pressing play at the same time, but I just watched you guys just talking right into the mic. So I wanted to make sure that we were. Are we going to use the apps?
I mean, I was just enjoying talking to my friends.
We were having a conversation. I just sort of thought we'd let the app do the podcast and we just have a conversation because everything has to be recorded.
Okay.
We could just talk with our friends.
Shit. I'm sorry, guys. My consciousness got into the cloud and built Skynet.
Oh, God.
Oh, Nick.
I'm fucked.
Oh, no. It's infecting my computer. There's hentai everywhere, Nick. What have you done?
I gotta talk to the Defense Department. I'm sorry. We troll for body parts in a swamp and sneak aboard a private space shuttle as we play You Play Dystopian Indie Darling Norco this week on Get Played.
Welcome to Get Played, your one-stop show for good games, bad games, and every game in between. It's time to Get Played! I'm your host, Heather Ann Campbell, along with my fellow host, Nicholas Weiger.
Hi, I'm Nicholas Weiger, along with my fellow host, Matthew Apodaca.
That's right. Hello, everyone.
Hello, everyone. And welcome back
or
to
should
Get
I say,
Played. Well, huh?
Greetings, everyone, since we're being so formal.
Oh,
It's true.
Greetings, everyone.
Greetings, everyone. Salutations.
Guys, this is our monthly We Play, You Play episode where we cover one specific game and have warned / invited the audience to come along with us. So we've got a lot to talk about, the three of us.
We sure do.
I'm wondering how your weeks were.
My week's been okay. I had COVID, and then I started testing negative for COVID, and then I was like, okay, I guess I'm just invincible now.
Yeah.
So now I've got that feeling.
Yeah.
Which is being on the other side of it. But
added on to what you already feel like as a white guy.
Yeah, as a white man in America, for sure. Everything's going my way. And I don't expect things to change.
That's great. I don't know if I've said that I don't have COVID anymore. I also don't have it. Look at us, the non-COVID havers.
I'm still on the other side of that rainbow, having
Proud
never had COVID.
Congrats.
I hope I don't get that Omicron variant 1/Omicron variant 5 double hitter that I've read about in the news.
Yeah, as long as you're not
heard about this.
Traveling a lot or going to crowded bars, I think you'll be just fine.
Oh, no, I'm doing that thing.
Oh, boy. Can we talk real quick about a story that one of you linked me to? I think it was Heather. This is a. And look, we don't try to get too political on this show.
Oh, here we go.
But we can all can all agree. The Supreme Court is finally... No, hold on. We can all agree that Ted Cruz is a ghoul. There was a Ted Cruz gamer-related...
He's like a mouse being squeezed out of a toothpaste tube is the way he looks to me.
He's like less charming than like an anthropomorphic turd. Like, I'd rather talk to a turd.
I don't like bragging on anybody's looks because looks is the like one thing that we can't control, but he looks bad to me.
Yes.
He looks like if you spilled a Sparklets water cooler with almond butter.
Yeah.
Like that's like, he's just a ghoulish looking man and has a ghoulish disposition, and that extends to his gaming habits. Ted Cruz admits he's a gamer and spends money to unlock advantages. This is from Indy 100. This was aggregated a number of places. A Republican Senator Ted Cruz has admitted he's quite the gamer and even has his own strategies for getting to the top in the virtual world. You can buy in-game items and make your character stronger or get advantages. I'll sometimes buy it because it's a lot more fun. Suddenly your character has like a lot of great stuff. I'll spend $20 for a treasure chest full of great coins. This guy's pay to win.
Yeah, he's pay to win. And you know what? I'm sure that doesn't extend very far, you know, to his job either. I'm sure he's quite familiar with that concept.
Dumb. Oh, boy. I'm not going to fault a guy who is experiencing a system in the one world and is like, oh, I should use this in another world. Like,
yes.
You know, for those of us who've had to come from, who've basically had to skill run their way through life, of course, it's a little aberrant to me to be like, oh, what I would like to buy is, like, can you imagine if you could buy Street Fighter combos? Fuck!
Don't give them the idea, first of all. Maybe I'll take this out.
Costumes is fine. I'm fine with, you know what? I think costume, let people purchase fucking goofy ass. What? Who cares?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, I think, been the divining line for a while of just like aesthetic stuff is okay. You know, if you set wearables, that's fine. Once you start getting to stuff that affects gameplay, then it completely skews the balance. And it also incentivizes the developers to. Make you know the purchasable stuff more powerful, it screws up everything. It just ruins these games as games.
If I can just offer devil's advocate real quick, I just know that, you know, Teddy Boy, he works so hard and just doesn't have as much time to like grind levels and things like that. So, you know, he has to buy these things to stay competitive with everybody. He's worked so hard.
That's true. Yeah, he doesn't. He's got a full calendar of taking meetings with lobbyists.
And going to fucking Mexico when your state is in a fucking state of duress. Piece of shit.
How dare you, sir?
I hope all of his meals are ruined henceforth.
Yeah, me too. I do want to say I'm impressed that he does all his own stunts.
And you know, yeah, he's really, really good in those movies.
He's incredible.
He's so
fantastic.
Good. And have you seen this guy's Simpsons impressions?
They're really good.
He should replace the actors.
I was looking up the name of the congressman because he was in California. Duncan Hunter, that was the guy. But one of the things he was doing is he was using his campaign money to spend just like shit for on himself. But he put a bunch of campaign money into a Steam account. So he was just like, you know, taking campaign funds and like going on vacations and going to fancy dinners, that typical sort of stuff. But also he was a fucking, you know, buying DLC for Mass Effect or whatever.
Yeah. Playing Half-Life 2.
Yeah.
Good grief. Well, you know, it's just good. Politicians are good. And it's
we like them.
We like them a lot. That's great.
Where'd the country be without them?
Yeah. And they're just like us. They're not so different,
that's why
you
I vote
and
for
I. Yeah. God bless them. And this country.
Have we talked about RRR on the show at all? Because I know we've all seen it.
Oh, my God. We have not.
It's so fucking good.
It's so good.
A masterpiece. Fantastic.
If anyone hasn't seen it or isn't familiar with it, it is on Netflix right now. As of this record, at least, I imagine it'll be there for a while. And the director has a couple other films on there. But it's just a fucking absolute. It's just wall-to-wall showstoppers. It's just 3 hours and 8 minutes with not a dull frame.
No.
In the whole fucking movie. It's unbelievable.
I have never said yes or laughed with more joy and support for a longer period of time in my life. Nothing has ever happened for 3 hours where I was constantly going, yes, yes, yeah, yeah, that's so good. I guess maybe that sounds like fucking, huh? I've never.
I wouldn't know.
Oh, yeah. Well.
I was going to say before you said that Nick and I are going to try to break that record on the show today.
the shout out to my lovely wife, Natalie, who found this that was screening in at the theater. And she was like, we should go see this in the theater. And we went and saw this. This was before I had COVID. I saw it in the theater and the audience was so fucking jacked. It was like half the audience had already seen it and knew what they were in for. And the other half was just like, you know, had either heard the hype or was just a film enthusiast or was there accompanying someone who'd already seen the film. And I haven't really experienced this in a movie before, but it like when credits rolled at the end, it got a standing ovation.
Yes.
In a movie theater. It was just like everyone was just so entertained. But anyway, I know we're just maybe this is. It's media, but also I'll say like it kind of has that sort of video gamey feel in some of the set pieces. I mean, there's a straight up stealth mission for part of it. I can say without spoiling anything.
Yes, there are, and the characters in a lot of ways, like in any good story, they level up along the way.
In more ways than one.
Yeah,
yeah,
very very good, highly entertaining.
Fantastic.
That dance scene at the party, I can't stop thinking about. There's a lot of things in that movie that I can't stop thinking about, but I always go back to that as just like being like, wow, that might have been the most fun, like, what, 10 minutes I've ever like experienced in my life. It was great. It was fantastic.
We were talking about Ted Cruz's Mission Impossible franchise earlier, and it's like that. It's like that level, you know, because we're still being vague about what the movie is, but it's like that level of like action sequences. But then there's also just dancing. There's just dance numbers. It's just like they just. You know what? If they just had, they just fucking crushed a dance number. Like, and I'm not just talking about like, it's like, oh, it's like a Hollywood actor trying to dance. You know, it's like, no, this is like these are world-class dancers dancing their fucking asses off.
Yes.
Just in this fully committed dance number in the middle of the movie that's like as dazzling as any action sequence. It's fucking thrilling. And Not Two, I think is the number you're talking about. It's so fucking good.
Yes.
Yeah.
So great. I mean, just check it out. That's not what this podcast is about, but just go watch that fucking thing. You're going to, if you like us, you'll like that movie. It's like, it's fucking great. It's just,
it's
so good.
Incredible. Fantastic.
Yeah. Man. Oh, great. I love the cinema.
And that is cinema. It's cinema.
It's cinema.
Yeah.
That's a fucking movie.
Marty Scorsese looked at it and was like, now that's what I'm talking about.
That's a pull quote on the poster. That's why I saw it. Anything else before we get into some video games?
I mean, there was the confirmation, the light confirmation maybe from Yuji Naka that Michael Jackson was indeed involved in Sonic 3.
Yes.
Which has been like an urban legend for a long time. But yeah, this isn't a news podcast. This is a podcast where we talk about what we're playing.
Whoa.
And that's what I want to know, Nick.
How would you ask that? Like, I don't know how we transition into
that portion of the show.
Think.
Well, I'm going to start. I feel like I should start auditioning voices for the remake, just in case they change the voice. Because I would hate to be dated. I'd hate to be going, you know, what are you playing? And it's for the new voice to be like, oh, what are you playing? So that's the one for this week. You think that might be the... That might be what they do.
It would be bone chilling, certainly. That'd be great.
Can you also? It would be horrifying if it was like, "What are you playing?" You'd be like, "Oh my god!"
I watched that come out of you, and I am. I was scared.
Nick, what are you playing?
I'll answer that horrifying query with a game that I think we've all spent some time with. I've played 12 of the levels in story mode. I think there's like 16 total, something like that. But Shredder's Revenge came out this past week, the new Ninja Turtles game developed by Tribute Games, who members of Tribute worked on the Scott Pilgrim game. And it's, you know, it's a throwback. If you haven't messed with this already, and if you like those old Ninja Turtles arcade games, you know, the original and Turtles in Time, which got home ports, obviously, and I spent a lot of time playing Turtles in Time in particular on Super Nintendo with my friends as a kid. If you like those games, it is very much just that throwback 16-bit aesthetic with a little bit more depth to the gameplay. I'd say actually probably quite a bit more depth to the gameplay, just in terms of the way you can control the characters.
Yeah.
It just gives you a little bit more. I mean, you can do more to mitigate damage and to avoid just, you know, getting gradually chipped away and eventually killed, because the way the original arcade games were designed was based off of, you know, whatever, 2 minutes per credit, right? They were quarter munchers. They were trying to make sure that you were going to die, so you'd have to put more credits in to finish it. And so this one has a dodge roll, which adds a lot. It means you can actively avoid damage a lot, and it's super satisfying. It has a great feel. I would say this is a home run, just in terms of what it is, in terms of like, hey, here's a throwback 16-bit beat 'em up that's got the Ninja Turtles you know and love, and the spirit of the original games, but just with some modern quality of life improvements. I've had a blast with it. I'm definitely going to finish it. We'll see what happens from there. But I'm just like, I think this is just such a delightful package.
I hadn't spent a lot of time with the original Ninja Turtles games. I know we did one on the show. Yeah. But
we did a shitty Ninja Turtles.
We did a bad
game,
one.
Pretty sure.
That's kind of like the NES only one. Experience that I've had with it. I guess I've played the ones that like maybe, you know, in passing at an arcade or whatever. So my beat 'em up experience is very minimal, actually. Only like the Simpsons game and maybe the X-Men one. I've played the Scott Pilgrim one, and I also I didn't finish it, but I really liked what I played of Streets of Rage 4. Really great as well. But this, I was just like, oh, like, I love these guys. Like, these are guys that I like already. This is already so fun. And in this one, like, I feel like it wouldn't be strange in a game like this where if you wanted to change character, you'd have to start all the way over. But you can just pick right up where you left off with your previous character. Like, if I was playing Michelangelo a little bit, and I was like, okay, well, I kind of want to play Raph now just to see what Raph's like.
Sure.
And then you could just pick up right where you left off.
Cool, but rude.
Yeah. This guy?
Yeah.
He's really, really rude. It's like, it's good that you said that, just so you know.
He's cool, but he's rude.
He's really, really cool, and like, I do like him a lot. He's gonna like really ruin your day. Like, he's really rude. I just wanted to try out some of the movesets. And they're all fun. They all play great. They all play super fun. And I haven't experienced the multiplayer yet. But I've heard from friends of mine that, like, once you get six players in there, that it's fucking chaos.
Yeah. I read a little bit. I also haven't played multiplayer, and we should have played together at some point, but we just couldn't figure that out. Or you guys didn't want to, which is fine. I'll take that. It's got six players. Because you can play Splinter, and you can play April O'Neil.
Mm-hmm.
And Casey, right?
Is Casey in there? Is he unlockable?
I think you can unlock Casey.
Oh, that's cool.
So someone's on the bench at some point.
Mm.
Sorry, Donatello. You're benched. No, he's good.
He's good.
What platforms do you guys have it on? Because my guess is we don't all have it on the same platform, and I don't know if there's cross-platform play.
I haven't investigated. I got it off Game Pass because it's on Game Pass. So yeah. I'm just playing it on Xbox.
It's cross-compatible with Xbox and PC, of course, but I don't think it's cross-play with other systems. But I was thinking about... I have it on Game Pass, but I was thinking about picking it up for the Switch just because it feels like a game that would be great to have anywhere I wanted it to be.
Yeah.
And to have the physical edition, which I heard comes with a coupon for Pizza Hut.
It does.
Yeah.
That's fucking awesome.
Just like the old days.
Yeah. Get a little personal pie from Pizza Hut. It's so fun. Heather, you've been messing around with it a little bit too, eh?
Because of this week's We Play, You Play and my personal workload, I've only been able to play this game for 15 minutes. I played it and was so happy. I was like, oh, this is great. What fun. And then I was like, ah, shit, I have to start playing our We Play, You Play.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't get to really dip more than a toe into Shredder's Revenge.
Mm.
And who knows if I'll ever have a chance to play it again,
mm-hmm.
Because I really have to like lock in the next week's game.
We restructured
this to be like, oh, what if it was more fun for us? And what if we're all playing the same game and we're not covering that game?
Yes.
That means that we failed as a podcast. Like that was the whole goal is like, oh, we're already gamers. Why don't we just make the show about the things that we're playing? And instead, I spent six fucking hours on this thing.
I was going to play that one anyway, but this month's game anyway. But I'll say that maybe we could have done the Shredder's Revenge episode, but also we didn't know.
Fools.
We didn't know. It was coming out late. Late in the month.
We could have all gotten the pizza. We could have eaten pizza and done we could have done a double hander with, say, like a sister show that mm-hmm. covers food.
Mm.
And you could have done Pizza Hut and Ninja Turtles, but
I could have made a quick phone call to my colleagues at Stitcher and got Phil Rosenthal on the horn, talk about it on Naked Lunch.
There we go. That's what I'm talking about. Nice sister
That's synergy.
Show.
That's synergy, baby. That's what we're talking about.
I was going to say I want us to play a little bit from the score.
Yeah.
Because it's really fucking good. Matt, you mentioned Streets of Rage 4. I believe the composer T. Lopez also did the score for that. He also composed some tracks for Sonic Mania. But it's great. This is one of the tracks, I believe, from the mall level. Obviously very, very much in that 16-bit era. This feels like it could be in a platformer, obviously a beat-em-up or a racing game. But also, I kind of get some Marvel Capcom stage music from this.
Yeah, that was what I was gonna be like, man, this sounds like a Marvel Capcom. Want to take you for a ride.
There's, like, there this go. This whole... The whole soundtrack rocks. It's really good.
I had trouble picking a track, and I eventually just sort of was like, this seems like the fan consensus, but there's like a Technodrome track that's fucking just an absolute banger. This is one of those ones I scrambled over to Bandcamp to buy the score because I was just like, this is fucking, I'm gonna listen to this. This is a rotation.
It's just nice that for fans of, I would imagine this is like a great, like, welcome home to fans of this type of game, one.
Yes.
And like the Turtles franchise. Like, it's such like a, I don't know. It just seems like they put a lot of love into this thing. It's great. It's really, really great. People are calling it Game of the Year.
I'm having a blast with it. I'm definitely going to finish it. I've heard a little bit of grousing about the length of the campaign, but also it's like, what do you want? Do you want 80 levels? Like, this is what these games were, you know? They didn't overstay their welcome, and there's a lot of labor involved in populating these with enemies and making the combat encounters fun and having a lot of interactable objects and making the levels look good. There's just a lot of work involved in 16 levels of this thing.
And we were talking last week
mm-hmm.
about input and how important precise input is when you're playing a game like Pac-Man. This game lives or dies by whether or not the input is precise. And this thing, oh my God, it plays
feels
so beautifully.
Great.
It's awesome. Feels it's great. Really, really great.
It's yeah. a really snappy
absolute
experience.
Delight.
Yes. Yeah.
Great
absolute
work.
Delight. There is something I will, well, because when we had we had Sean Diston as one mm-hmm. of our guests, a noted Ninja Turtle expert back when we did our NES TMNT game, which is not
yes.
a good game.
No.
But this is one of those ones where like when I talked with Diston about Ninja Turtles, I'm like, oh, I like the Ninja Turtles. And I'm like, oh, I am completely out of my depth here.
Yeah.
And I definitely felt that playing through this game because like some of the like, you know, hey, I know Baxter Stockman, you know, like I know a lot, you know, hey, I know the Rat King.
Yeah.
But then some guys show up and it's just like, wait, who's this Triceratops with a laser rifle?
Yeah.
This is part of Ninja Turtles? When did this happen?
Shame on you, Nick. Shame
was this,
on you.
Was this from the original series?
I bet you don't even remember Cowlick. The floating cow head.
No.
Is it true? That's
is that
a true
real?
Thing. Yeah, it's true.
There's like a big bat also, and I was like, who's this?
Yeah, the big bat, yeah.
Too scary, too, also. Also, I like that once you find pizza in the game, you go all the way back to full health, baby. That's pizza that comes in clutch.
Well, there's multiple types of pizza. You'll get full health. You'll get a
big
jacked up power meter.
Oh yeah,
you get
yeah.
big jack. You get jacked up.
Yeah. One oh pizza. Yeah. Hey, for that pizza, save me a slice.
I'm still a pretty significant Ninja Turtles fan. I read all of The Last Ronin,
wow.
which is the recent Ninja Turtles comic series that was a limited series. I think it was 5 issues from my good friends over at Secret Headquarters
Boom.
Here in Los Angeles. Never miss an opportunity to plug my favorite comic book store in the entire city. Last Ronin's premise is fucking awesome. Only one turtle is left alive. And Jesus, he is avenging Lord. The death of the other 3.
That rocks.
Wow. Fucking awesome. So good. So
it seems,
good.
I don't know. It seems like there's a lot to love there. I used to love the cartoon when I was a kid. I know
yeah.
the I'm familiar with them.
Sure.
But like there's something for everybody, for every kind of turtle fan. I only saw the
yeah.
more the 90s movies a couple maybe definitely during the pandemic. I was going to say a couple of years ago, but it was actually yeah during the pandemic. Which
That's
is which both things
years.
Are yeah, both things are true.
Yes.
I thought those were great. But it's just cool that they have such longevity. You know, I'm sure not all of it's great, but it's cool that they're still around and people still really like them.
We should do a hate watch of the Michael Bay films.
I would love it. I would because
I've never seen them.
Even
is it one or two?
I think there's two.
There's two of
yeah,
them, but he
two.
Didn't direct the second one. Actually, I don't know. If he, did he direct either?
I think yeah. he. Oh, interesting question. Let me just Google this real quick.
There's a John Woo Ninja Turtles 2, which I've never seen.
I've seen that one.
John
In the
Woo
theater.
Ninja Turtles.
It's like a Nickelodeon
wow.
Ninja Turtles, right?
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't know how I would necessarily hate watch it, just because if Michael Bay's doing it, I'm tuning in. I got to see what's going on.
I love it, honestly. I probably like both of these movies a lot.
It was the visible nostrils and lips.
Yes.
That mm-hmm. made it so that I couldn't see Ninja Turtles by Michael Bay in the theater.
So Michael Bay didn't direct. I believe he's just credited as a producer.
Producer?
Yeah.
Visible nostrils.
Yes. They didn't. They needed the Sonic movie fans to
They should
to
have
speak
done
up.
It.
Maybe that's why they got vocal for Sonic, because they were like, we let Ninja Turtles happen and we said nothing.
It's like when the American Godzilla movie in the 90s, like, just made Godzilla sort of a big bug. Like, it was a real bummer.
Yeah.
And then as soon as the original production company in Japan had the opportunity, I think it was the year 2000, Kill All Monsters, maybe, or Godzilla Final Wars or something, where Japanese Godzilla fights all the other versions of Godzilla mm-hmm. and just fucking ruins the American Godzilla immediately.
Damn.
That's what we need to have happen with any version of any animated character we don't like.
Yes, they should be publicly killed.
Yeah. Great.
I think they should get together with the modern beloved version and then just have kind of a heart-to-heart sort of be like, you know what? Maybe people didn't like me at my time, but these days, hopefully I can be respected. And they have a little redemption story. People like that shit.
When are they going to give the redemption arc to Jar Jar? I mean, we've got this Obi-Wan series.
He's overdue. Yeah.
Like, it feels like if you did, like, if you could rehabilitate Jar Jar's, like, legacy in some way, it would be very well received by people who are viewing the prequels through rose-colored lenses.
Yeah.
Glasses?
Correct people. But yeah. hey, maybe we'll get Jar Jar coming to Disney Plus. Who knows?
Maybe.
I think we'll get some sort of Gungan redemption in some capacity at some point. It's inevitable.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Heather.
What?
What are you playing?
Well, for fucking 15 minutes, I played Ninja Turtles, and the rest of the week, I played. This hole that I'm in mm-hmm. is full of the best, most wonderful games ever made.
Yes.
And I really don't have any fucking time to play them. I've spent a maximum of 2 hours on my optical drive emulated Dreamcast that has access to every game and all of the unreleased arcade games that use the same board. I don't know. When am I ever going to play games ever again? Can we get into this week's game yet?
This week's game We Play You Play is Norco. Norco came out on March 24th of this year, 2022, developed by Geography of Robots and published by Raw Fury. And this game, which is it's like a first person point and click graphic adventure, kind of has an old school adventure game feel, and it's received rapturous reviews from critics. Todd Martin's of the LA Times. The video game of 2022 so far, Norco, a masterpiece of interactive storytelling. John Walker from Kotaku. A stunning southern dystopia is one of the best written games of the year. Marissa Kloger from Polygon. Norco is an unforgettable game about losing and finding religion. The lead developer, Yuts, Y-U-T-S is how they go, what they go by, grew up in the real town of Norco, Louisiana, which is a town that has been ravaged by capitalism and oil exploration, major man-made disasters, the couple of shell plant explosions in its past, including one that affected somewhat wrecked his childhood home. This is from Nicole Carpenter of Kotaku. Norco shares its name with its setting, Norco, Louisiana, community within St. Charles Parish, a place backlit by a Shell oil refinery. It's where Yetz grew up, several blocks from an oil refinery. It's this giant fire-breathing dragon that exists in your backyard, Yetz said. It's hard to ignore. So, you know, this game had a lot of hype going into it, and it definitely, it from a gameplay standpoint, isn't doing anything particularly novel. The novelty of it, the freshness of it, the newness of it is just that it's got this really cool setting and world, and I, you know, I think some nice writing. It's just like it's a near future, dystopian, you know, like I guess it's like it's kind of a this will be a true story sort of, you know. I'm not sure exactly how far in the future we are, maybe 10 to 20 years, and you know, it feels like all the existing levers that are making the world so horrible are have been exacerbated and taken their logical conclusion, and you know, everyone is just working for a different app, and you know, wealth inequality has reached a breaking point. So we're kind of like in that sort of world, and then we're in this just really just depressed southern community where this company, basically this corporation, this oil company, basically owns the town. And the protagonist, you play as two different characters here, Kay and Catherine. And as the game begins, Kay, you are returning to your childhood home in Norco. Is that enough table setting? I feel like it's maybe too much table setting.
The table
set. There we go. The table's fucking set.
I love launching into these episodes and all episodes of this show by telling a little anecdote from my life that Nick has never heard.
Wow!
Since I've now of the understanding that that's like a trope of mine, I guess. So I've got family in New Orleans, and and when I was growing up, every summer my parents would basically drop me off in New Orleans for a month.
Wow!
And when I got my driver's license, I drove. In a single day, I'd tell my parents, I'm going to New Orleans. And I would drive in a single day from Chicago to New Orleans because they didn't feel safe with me staying in a hotel. But if I could do the entire, I think it was like 16, 17 hours in one setting, then I could go down to, I think it was Jefferson Parish and hang out with my folks. And spend time in New Orleans. And one time I was in New Orleans when a tropical storm hit and the pumps failed in New Orleans. And I was in the French Quarter when it flooded. And rats, the reason you knew that something was wrong was that rats started flying up out of the sewers. Like at all of the storm drains, just rats pouring out like rivers of fur. And by the I had ordered some alligator to eat for lunch. And I was sitting in a cafe, and by the time my alligator arrived, the water was up to my knees.
Oh my god.
And I was like, okay, this is bad. So I was heading back to my car, which was now half submerged underwater. This is in a time before cell phones. And there was a used bookstore, and the guy was like, hey, can you help? Can you help? And so I went into this used bookstore and helped this guy carry all these books up to the second floor because the bottom floor was flooding. I eventually had to caravan down the wrong way on the highway with a bunch of other cars because all the other underpasses were flooded in order to get out of the city and back to my family, who I couldn't contact because there were no cell phones. So I have a lot of personal history with the city and the surrounding parishes. You know, I had family there during Katrina.
Yeah.
That I expected to go into this game like, oh boy, here we go. We're going into like dystopian New Orleans. And instead my experience with this was really dissociative. Like I didn't enjoy Norco the way that I expected to based on the reviews. And also, it features a protagonist with cancer. And I was like, oh, here we go. And I found that writing to be insensitive at times. So that's my lead-in for our We Play, You Play. What do you think, Nick?
What if Nick's like, I have heard that story?
Yeah.
I didn't know the part about you ordering alligator, though. That's interesting.
Wait, did you know that story, Nick?
No, I'd never heard that before. It's
unbelievable. Okay, great.
A stranger. You helped him carry his inventory for his bookstore up to his second story to avoid a flood. It's insane.
Yeah.
It'd be the craziest thing that ever happened to me.
Yeah. I'd be telling that story every day.
The scariest part was driving the wrong way down the freeway.
Sounds like it.
Yeah.
Which was the 10, I think. And it was like everything in your brain is signaling, don't do this. But it was just a line of cars. And we used my paper map because I was from out of town and all the other cars didn't have paper maps in them. So the way we plotted our route was using this Chicago teenager's paper map to get out of the city. Wild.
You just like got home. Like you just got out of there and it was like, it's fine. Your parents how's New Orleans? Like, I was all right.
I remember opening. I know my mom's heard this story. So when she's listening to the podcast, she's not going to be like, what? Oh my God, my baby. Like, but there was a point where I opened up the door to my car, the water was equal levels inside and outside my car, which was right at the gas pedal.
Ugh.
It was pretty gross.
Oh, man.
Terrifying.
Yeah. Shitty car, though. Like, no love lost on that car. We literally bought it for $1. Like, literally bought it.
Oh, my God. Wow.
$1. $1.
The price is right at it.
Yeah.
The game was, the developer says he was, or one of the developers says he was inspired by Snatcher, which we played on the podcast and loved.
Mm-hmm.
It's become one of my favorite graphic adventures ever. Also, another game, Deja Vu, was mentioned. I never played Deja Vu. I believe it was a Koei game. There was an NES port at least. But they also, the same developer made another game I did play back in the day, Shadowgate, which was very similar first-person adventure game and, you know, just like a lot of puzzles. This was more of a medieval setting. Deja Vu is more of a noir detective setting. So it's, you know, it's got detective-y elements and there are detective characters in it. One element that is, I guess, fairly novel for this, to me it felt inspired by, it felt Disco Elysium inspired. I mean, I think it's probably hard for that game not to touch a lot of games that follow in its wake, but the mind map, which is an element of like, you know, as you get more details informing your character, your characters, it will, you'll have this UI screen that has a bunch of different, like different character profiles, or it's like, you know, portraits of characters or chunks of the environment or just objects. And then through that, you will gradually illuminate more details about all of them and then also the connections between them, you know, which is kind of a fun way of expanding the story and just giving additional context as you travel through the plot. I don't know. I like the mind map.
I like the mind map. I like, you know, in a game like this, which I think it says like, or, you know, time to beat is like pretty low. I think it's like 5 hours or something. Pretty low. That's like two movies. I don't know what I'm saying. That's like almost a whole work day for somebody. But it compared
RRR
to other
games, is 3 hours and 8 minutes. Yeah. And it's like, that movie's fucking long, but it's worth it.
Yes, yes. It's short in comparison to other games that I play, games that we play. But I spent 10 hours with this thing because I've learned that I'm like a serial clicker.
My playthrough took closer to 8 to 10 hours, it felt like.
Yeah, I'm clicking on every single thing. I'm clicking a bunch of times because I've just learned that I didn't grow up with this type of game. This is like a new type of game to me. It's so like pointing and clicking. I'm now just like, okay, I'm going to point at everything and click on everything that I see a bunch and try to get new information. You don't always get new information in this one. But there's a couple things that if you click enough times, you know, you get rewarded with a certain thing. But I don't know. I liked playing this. I will say, if only for the interesting story, right? Like in the, like, yeah. I thought the story was pretty interesting. I thought the, I had never seen a video game setting like that before. I'm very unfamiliar with New Orleans, as it were. I liked the I didn't like the dystopia. There were things about the dystopia that were like unique to me, like in the storytelling. I was like, oh, like that's like a novel idea. Like some of the things that you know, you learn about what like, what's actually going on later on. But I also thought some of the game was funny. There was a couple of funny things in this where I was like, okay, this is pretty funny.
Yeah, I think that one of those, I believe, if we're talking about the same thing, ties into clicking through a bunch and just getting a lot of following an additional dialogue path as far as it goes. But before we touch on that, because I agree with you, like I the setting a lot, and I thought that like the way that I thought like as a noir story, I thought like the mystery was pretty satisfying, and I thought that just sort of like, you know, I like the. I like sometimes sci-fi can seem a little bit conservative if it's too much like finger wagging of like, this is what this technology is going to do.
Phone bad.
Exactly. Yeah. But this one was a little bit, it seemed like it was a little bit more of a nuanced comment of just sort of like, you know, these are the systems that exist and this is how future technologies could exploit those systems, you know? So I thought all that was handled, but Heather, I'm curious, cause this is something I didn't pick up on. What about like the writing to you felt inauthentic or even, I mean, the word you used was offensive.
No, wait, did I say offensive? I meant in terms of
insensitive.
Insensitive. I think is what
yeah,
it was,
no, yeah. No. There was nothing about the environment, nothing about New Orleans. I would never like nothing about it was inauthentically Louisiana. Like
you were specifically talking about the way it handled a cancer, a character with cancer.
It felt to me, I don't know how to. I don't believe that people who have experienced a thing should be the only ones who write about a thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like I should be able to write dialogue for dudes, right? Mm-hmm. Even though I'm not a dude.
Not me. Boo! Like,
I feel like I should be able to, but there's something about the sort of like tackiness of using a woman who's fighting cancer as like a plot trope to forward your plot. And like, you know, when she overexerts herself and she's exhausted on the floor of the what was that? When you're going through that sky rise and it's like she, you know, she collapses to the floor and oh my God, like it just felt, it felt indulgent. And it felt like it didn't feel real to me. And because it didn't feel real, it felt gross.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. I remember you said something in our text thread to that point where it was sort of, where you sort of said like it like you had cancer. So you, as someone who's experienced that, have said you were like, I don't think anybody who has cancer would say something like this, describing their cancer, basically, like the way that they described it.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe, you know, the writer on this game has personal experience with cancer and I'm just reading into it, you know, and maybe I'm being a fucking gatekeeper and a dick and I don't want to be those things. But there was some, it felt weird to me. It felt like something you'd put on a spreadsheet, like, oh, and the mom, oh, she's got cancer and it's all through her body, but she's going to go out and investigate this thing. Like, it just felt like my experience of cancer is when you've got cancer and you're fighting it, it's the only fucking thing you think about all the time.
Yeah.
It's not like a belt buckle. Right. So I don't know. It just felt weird to me. I'm super uncomfortable giving that criticism because I'm not like a fucking cancer expert or authority.
Right.
You know?
I think you're allowed to feel about it however you feel about it. If it rubbed up against you the wrong way while you're experiencing it,
it did.
It's not true to you, then that's okay to feel that way.
It did.
It might be true to somebody else. It might be similar. You know, somebody else who played it might have been like, oh, like that was how I felt or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, but that doesn't mean it's for everybody.
Yeah, that was my experience. I'm not saying that's everybody's experience or that if you don't have that experience that you're bad.
Yes.
Like, that was my experience. Was it just didn't ring true to me on some level and that upset me.
No, it's an interesting perspective and one, you know, again, I didn't pick up on because, you know, that's not my experience, but you know, I agree with Matt. It's fine if you feel that way. I mean, that was your reaction.
Okay, great.
Can we talk about the guy who took a shit in the limo?
Yeah.
Now this is where I really dialed in.
This is where, so like I've had to take a big shit all the time in public a number of times. I will say this is like
great.
This story. So there's a sequence. There's an NPC you're talking with that you encounter a couple of times, and
wait, you have to set it up in the gamey bullshitty way that all games work. In order to get through a door, you have to like talk to a hot dog vendor, and the hot dog vendor's like, "I'm selling hot dogs from before Katrina," and so you're like, "Oh man, I don't want one of those." And he's like, "Well, if you can sell this hot dog to somebody else, I'll tell you the code to the door." So you go find some other asshole, and you're like, "Hey, you hungry?" And he's like, "Yeah, I am." And you're like, "Why don't you go try one of those hot dogs?" And he goes over and he eats the hot dog, and then the guy gives you the code to the door. It's like, "Ugh, okay, fine, yeah, okay, puzzle bullshit, great." But as Nick was saying.
Yes, and then you run into that NPC later, I think that same evening, and he has a long optional dialogue where he details his odyssey of what that hot dog did to his gastrointestinal tract. I don't want to spoil all of it, but it involves him going into someone else's limo and deciding to shit inside of it.
And if you think that's a spoiler...
Yeah.
There's more to it.
No.
The length of that story. You can't believe it just keeps, like, you expect each paragraph to be the final paragraph of him of him speaking, and it isn't. It just keeps going.
The longer it went, like, the funnier it got. It was so funny. Like, it was, like, I was really, like almost like holding my sides laughing. I thought it was so funny.
I was laughing at I thought it was very funny. It was really well paced. It was one of those jokes that goes on a little too long and then goes on so long that it makes it funny again.
Yeah.
And then the thing that really made me laugh is that if you get all the way through it, you get an achievement.
Oh, because that's the other thing. This NPC gives you options to be like, you don't want to hear the rest of the story, and then like the dialogue option you have to select to keep going is funny. It's like, no, try me. I've heard it's like like egging him on. Like
she, at that point, you're playing Kay's mom.
Yeah,
and in order to make her make this NPC tell you that story, you also have to play that mom as a bit of a psychopath.
Yes,
because she's like, no, I fucking want to hear it. And he's like, trust me, lady, you don't. And you're like, tell me your shit story. it's insane. Like the balance between humor and non-humor in this game was strange, in a way that really did feel like it evoked Snatcher, where you're like, man, I'm really fixing this case, and I'm gonna look at this girl's boobies in the middle of like solving this crime, right? Although that was more egregious in Police Knots, than in Snatcher. The same way you're like, I'm gonna hunt down some clues, and you pet a cat because who wouldn't pet a cat?
Right.
And if you pet the cat too much, it takes off through the ceiling. And you're like, what is that doing here in this moment? What happened? Why is that happening?
Yeah.
And there's a strange goofiness to some of the comedy in the game, right?
I mean, I like that layer to it because it's like, for instance, there, it's just sort of like, it makes the whole thing feel like a fever dream. It's just like, this is a fucking, this future is so much different than we could possibly anticipate that there is shit like there's a robot cat that, you know, turns into projectile if you overstimulate it. So like, I was into those sort of flourishes. I liked like the, there's kind of a pseudo Proud Boy esque cult of guys who all wear Best Buy uniforms. That's like an element where, and like, there's a guy building a Musk like figure who's building a rocket ship. That's at the center of that. Like, all that stuff is just like, this is so fucking weird that I'm kind of just along for this ride. There's a puppet show that takes you into like this whole story about a gator that kind of becomes like this little allegory for, you know, and I think you have to go through this for progression.
Yeah.
That's like another weird little turn that I'm just like, oh, this is one of those kind of like indie game flourishes that I appreciate because it feels so specific to this medium. I don't feel like I'd necessarily see this in something if it wasn't a game that was trying to tell this story.
It has like all that stuff and like funny stuff too, but then I was also like, this game is like really sad. Like, it's like it was a bit of a bummer.
There was an interview where they interviewed Yutz. Was it mm-hmm. Yutz? And he talked about it having bummer vibes.
Yes.
Yeah. Sure. And that's accurate, I think.
Like, I was never like so sad that I had to stop playing it or something. But it was sort of like, oh, like I gotta play something else.
Yeah,
I gotta play something else for a little bit.
There's something glamorous in like Snatcher, mm-hmm. where you're like, oh, I kind of want to occupy these spaces. Like these, sure. Like, there's kind of like something shiny and slick and capitalist and oh, it all looks like a big Coca-Cola ad. That Norco, I don't want to be in any of those spaces.
It's such a shitty future. Like, it doesn't look that much different. It's dirtier. It just didn't seem good. Like, nobody was happy that it was. If anything, it was like, you know what? Maybe I'll stay here. In this time. which is decidedly not great. But like, looking forward in time just a little bit, I'm like, oh, that's what it turns out. That sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think also a lot of that just is the setting of just like this, okay, well, it seems like the claw, the you know, the real life shell corporation, and here it's the Shield Corporation, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, it's already got its hooks into this community and has kind of been exploiting it for generations, and what if that just continues for, you know, another 20 years and gets even worse. It definitely is very grim. I don't know. I like the art. I like the soundtrack.
Yeah.
I guess if I'm looking for nits to pick, there's a decision. So it's not voiced at all, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a gibberish VO, which to me, it's kind of like, you know, you're dealing sometimes with very serious, very grim sort of dialogue.
Yeah.
And then you've got like basically, you know, you got a character from Banjo-Kazooie sort of like babbling at you. That kind of pulled me out of it a lot. It was a minor thing. And also another thing that kind of rubbed against me a little bit was the combat, which just, that to me felt like a Snatcher homage. It's like, okay, we've got these sort of like little bits of, you know, it's semi RPG, but it's semi target shooting, you know, sequences that to me just always was like, I just wish this wasn't in here. Like, I wish this was skippable or just omitted.
Yeah. Yeah. Those sequences always stressed me out. You get a character that like can one hit KO enemies, which is good. Cause I was like, oh good, get me through this faster. These sequences faster. But, the ones where you have like, there's like two, a couple different types. You have ones that are like timed targets, basically, that like they have like a there's a target on screen and there's like a circle closing in on it. You have to get them, you know, in the correct order, like when the circles close. And then there's like a memory one where you have to remember which is which. And guess which one I was terrible at? I have a terrible memory for things I just saw. And you know, I'm sure having had COVID recently didn't help. But it was like, so I would always get hit. I think I only passed those a couple of times when they were slow. If they got too fast, I was like, I'm not getting this. There's no way. No.
But it also feels like there's not, I don't know, you know, like I got through all of them, so I don't know if there's like a hard fail for any of these, but it also feels like the stakes are not super high for these encounters.
Yeah, yeah. So if they're not high, take them out. Who cares? And I liked beating up the one guy at the early
gas
on
station?
In the at the gas station. Yeah, because
Dimes
he was a piece
discount?
Of shit. Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yes. And then some of the other ones, I guess toward the end are interesting, but you know, I don't know if it necessarily needed it. I was there just for the story. I wasn't like, you know what this needs? Annoying combat.
Yeah. I think even more so than and you touched on this earlier, Matt, but like, yeah, story like is a big driver, but also just like setting. I feel mm-hmm. like this is just like this is a game setting. It's just so visceral. Like you talked about that Dime Discount store, and yeah, there's a guy outside of it, but you go inside of it and it's like an unmanned store.
Yeah.
It's like there's a fucking, you know, robot who's not a full robot, but basically like a sentient ATM that is manning the store. And it's like, oh yeah, we're just that will just be CVS in 10 years. Like we're just gonna they've already got the self-checkout. They're just gonna find a way to get those employees completely out of there and have this be completely unmanned so they can save on labor costs. And then they'll complain, you know, and then about how no one wants a job anymore.
And
pay cut
people,
the public sector even further. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so like some of that shit I really liked. You know, I like looking through all the interfaces. I like that, like when you're kind of in a cabal of freelance detectives,
yes.
You know, it's like they're all kind of like the it's like a task rabbit for crime solving. It feels like that everyone's kind of like involved in this. A bunch of people are just sort of involved in this app that's dispatching them. That also has this like surreal like monster element to it too. That's just you know, I don't know. That for me was doing so much of the work, and that's why I think this game will stick with me. Is just like I felt like the setting was so specific and so and so resonant, whatever I thought of the actual gameplay. And I get part of that is the I mentioned the score. Let's play a little bit of this. This is from One Night. This track is One Night in New Orleans. A few people worked on the score, but this track is by Gugali One.
Yeah, no complaints here.
This is a good bass track. A bass line for hearing. And you're reading, the cancer has spread to my bones. I don't think I'm going to live through the week.
I hope
That's
I find my brother.
Giving me a quest?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's extremely good shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, very good. Go on, Evan.
I really liked the setting also, right? Okay? I don't want to just be the negative Nancy on this episode of the show. I could lean into Heather Hates Puzzles and talk about how tedious it is.
Oh, my God. Wait, no. Yeah, lean in. These puzzles, were bad.
How fucking tedious it is to be like... Even the minor... like quote puzzles where it's like, oh, if you, in order to talk to me, you're going to have to go get my dog and the dog's hungry. So you got to go across town to get the fucking dog food in order to like feed the dog. So it'll come with you so that you can continue the line of dialogue. Or like one of my least favorite things I've ever seen a fucking game is there's a crowbar on the ground in a scene before you need the crowbar. And I'm like, oh, I should take that crowbar with me. I'm probably going to need a crowbar.
Yes.
And you cannot physically pick it up until the story requires you to get a crowbar. And then you have to click the map, click the menu, go to the crowbar, pick up the crow. Like, it's like, I would have fucking put that in my pocket if I'd been Heather and talking to these people. I would have been like, I'm going to bring this crowbar with me.
I think I'm going to need that.
But then there's like the maddening puzzles of like traversing. Most of the game is you're looking at the thing that you're looking at and you're clicking elements of the screen in order to open up options or to engage with interactive portions of the environment. And then sometimes it switches to this top-down LED map mode when you're going through like a building or some shit and you have to solve puzzles inside that building. And that shit drove me fucking crazy.
That
made
hard.
Me miserable.
Yeah, I mean, I believe navigating the interior of the city hall, right?
Like, where you have to get up to the roof so you can scan the sky for a bit of dialogue from John Kenner or Kenner John,
mm-hmm.
The leader of the Garretts.
Yeah, who nobody likes.
A religious cult. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's the Proud Boy analog. They all wear name tags that say Garrett. And Best Buy uniforms, Best Buy shirts. I get what you're saying. I mean, like, you know, some of that stuff I mind less, but that's also because I grew up playing point and click adventures. So I was just like, oh, this is just like a Sierra adventure from 1995. It's just, you know, like I'm used to these sort of conventions. I'm used to this sort of like moon logic involved in, you know, whatever you have to put on you have to take a magic marker and draw a fake mustache on yourself in order to, you know, passes another character, that sort of stuff that just like doesn't really make sense in the real world. And that is present in this game. You're absolutely right. Yeah. And some of that stuff I found a little tedious. I think there is a chance that for some people, this would trip them up on this. And that would just be like, this is a thing I can't get past. For me, it wasn't much of an obstacle. But definitely a thing that maybe felt a little bit dated. I will say, I don't think anything was necessarily inscrutable. Like, I feel like all the puzzles were pretty solvable. There is a little bit of that hunt and peck element of, you know, I would have loved the equivalent. I'm sorry for bringing up Disco Elysium again, but just like the equivalent of you just hold tab and just it shows all the interactable objects on screen. I would have loved a shortcut like that instead of having to feel like I'm clicking a bunch of screen real estate to try and find something. But I did find like certain puzzles like, you know, when you're going around and you're looking for all the pieces of scripture that you're trying to assemble, like you're trying to find like little holographic clues for, you know, for different people. This is involving the Garrett's quest line that you're getting a little bit of bits of pieces of a message. You're assembling those by kind of going on a little bit of a scavenger hunt around the town and then scanning things using an app with your phone in game. Like, I found that like whole sequence pretty I was like, oh, this is a pretty engaging bit of puzzlery. I don't know. I guess what I'm saying is I agree with you. It just didn't affect me in the same way. It didn't bother me.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't know. I
don't want all games like this to be a visual novel, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I get that there should be interactive elements, but sometimes it's just frustrating to be like, I know what I have to do. Could I just type that in? I have to go get crowbar. And then it like is like, you got the crowbar. And then you're ready to go on to the next step. Or like, hey, if you ever meet my son, can you just tell him what I said? And then you have the ability to voice record later after you've interacted with that person.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm like, oh my God, I know I have to go back to that garage and voice record that fucking dude. Can I just type in record dude? Like, just,
yeah.
Like, it is tedious to me to, especially when you have limited time in your life to play these games, to have to like wait for the graphic to load on your, you know, like, it's
Ted Cruz would not be able to play this game. He has no time. To that point, though, too, I wish you just had the gear that you needed at the start. Like, if I'm a detective, I'm an amateur detective trying to solve this thing, I'm going to be like, okay, what do I need before I get started? And not later be like, ah, oh, shoot, I should have had a tape recorder or something. I wish I could record. And then you get some technology later that you didn't have until after you did, like, your mom's mission. And then now suddenly you're like, oh, you have this thing also that your mom, you have, well, it's because you got her phone. You got your mom's phone, so you have the same stuff now. But I was frustrated with that kind of like sort of back and forthness of it all as well.
I kind of like the way the voice recording worked. I mean, I just thought like it was just that you could record literally any line of dialogue that anyone spoke and then you could potentially use it later. Like, I thought that was kind of cool. Yeah, I understand why that was introduced later. But you are correct that I think, and I don't know. I mean, some of the stuff I may be being too forgiving here, but I just overall like the experience. But I'm just like, I feel like some of this stuff probably also comes from, you know, if you have a bigger team and more play testing, you might pick up on things like, oh, maybe there's another way to give the player the crowbar so it's not laying in plain sight earlier and it seems non-interactable, you know?
Well, first off, I want to say we're just an idiot podcast, and who are we to be say these things when the New Yorker and the Tribeca Film Festival have already said that this is a fantastic game? So maybe my complaints are invalid. That being said, to bring up your favorite game of the podcast, Disco Elysium, when you have to do these same tasks in Disco, there is a playfulness to them. Because there is the possibility of an interaction with Kim, or there is like an unexpectedness to the protagonist's work in the environment and like what he might find interesting or stumble upon, or the way that your mind map has affected. Like there's a novelty in solving those fetch puzzles where you have to like go to the fucking pawn shop in Disco and like get something evaluated that makes it fun to do. But like, if I'm going all the way back to that garage and hearing the exact same lines of dialogue with a new tool, that feels limited to me and frustrating, right?
Yeah, because
I get it.
At the end of the day, if you're backtracking a little bit in Disco Elysium, you're sort of like, oh God, Kim's gonna hate this. This is gonna be hilarious. Like going, like and doing something that he's just not gonna like.
I mean, it's the Disco Elysium. I think we're talking about one of the best PC RPGs of all time. Yeah. So it's like tough to compare. Is anything to that? But I get what you're saying. And you do have an NPC with you for much of the game, Million. Actually, who's a robot. A yellow robot buddy for part of it, but then you've got, you know, there are other NPC companions who are with you there's the detective, one of the detectives, and who probably could have, you actually have like a full party at a certain point, basically.
Yep.
And so like you probably could have had more of that chatter if that could have potentially livened things up, especially with some of those repeat visits to environments and characters.
I also feel like anytime I complain about a game that is clearly a work of art and I'm complaining about it, I feel like a piece of shit, because it's like when people tweet, like, why don't you make Rick and Morty funny? It's like, you're right. Yeah. Why didn't I? That's on me.
Well,
I could have just texted you that, by the way. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Now that we have cleared the air, I got some notes. Just kidding.
No, I really like my time with Norco. I would have played this anyway because I'd read the hype and I know this is the type of game that I like, and hey, it was on fucking Game Pass, so yeah. I don't know. I think it's a really cool. For me, it was just I have my own issues with it, and you know, I think like some of that rough around the edges stuff comes from it being a small team indie developer, and other of it is maybe just, you know, creative choices that it's fair to have disagreements with, but overall, I just thought like it was one of those things where it's like, this is just such a bold, different stroke that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Fucking cool. Yeah. Hey, fucking like I'll give this a lot of leeway in terms of a lot of allowance for what it's trying to do, just because I think what it's trying to do is so unique and interesting. And I thought like also like its larger points about just, you know, disaster capitalism and And how the tech industry takes advantage of that is just like, oh, this is in, like, I don't know. I think those are good comments, and it's cool to see that stuff in games.
Yeah, I liked it. I think I'm probably somewhere in between the two of you. Like, I enjoyed it. Mm. This is typically not my favorite type of game. Anyway, but I enjoyed it, even though, you know, I had some criticisms. But I like to your what you were just saying. Some of the sci-fi concepts they have about like the dystopia, like, are truly like horrific to think about. Like, they had some really unique, like, just like with what they were doing with like uploading consciousness and things like that. Like, that's like, it was like, oh, that's horrific. I hate this idea. Like, of course, that's something that some company somewhere is working toward. Earlier this week, they said that Alexa or whatever the it's Alexa, right? Yeah. God, I sound like I'm 100 years old. It's Alexa, right? that they'll have they're gonna try out this thing that, like, it has everyone's voice somehow, or I don't know what the actual thing is, but like
the one I saw was dead relatives' voices.
That's a living nightmare. That's I would, you know, as much as I'm sure some people will love to hear their loved ones who have passed voices again, that's can only be used for evil. Like, that is only going to lead to something bad.
Yeah. That's what I need. My mom's saying, are you watching hentai in there? Shut up, Mom. Dead. But yeah, that is a concept that's like kind of, that's touched on in the game. It's just like, you know, it's grim, and it's what's the word I'm looking for? I was going to say foreboding. I mean, it is foreboding. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to say foreboding. I'm trying to say another four word. Foreshadowing? Foretelling?
Yeah, I don't know. Why don't you look at your day, the word of the day calendar over there, see what that says.
Okay. Cat.
Oh, it's not very basic. It's not good. Yeah. You know the concept of days.
Yeah.
But regular words, hard time.
Any other thoughts on Norco?
I don't think so.
I would say check it out. Like you know, it's on PC right now. Hopefully when this comes from, and I know we certainly have a segment of our audience who doesn't have a gaming PC. Hopefully I imagine this will come to more platforms. I imagine this will be ported to at minimum Xbox and hopefully hopefully everything. So a larger audience can play this. I don't think we got too deep into spoiler country even here. Like, we touched on a few things, but I think there's a lot of plot that you will absorb as you're going through this if you haven't played this. So if you do have a gaming PC and you haven't played this yet and you're thinking about it, give it a whirl and see if it fits you. And maybe if it comes to your look for it to come to your platform if you can't play it right now.
You can finish it in the time it would take you to watch RRR 1.5 times.
Well, hey, it's time for the You Play of this month's We Play You Play. Our listeners are the review crew in the Re-You Crew.
Wow. Okay. These are got a lot of great ones. Just having fun. We're having fun.
RE4 Merchant is an unlockable character in the new Street Fighter.
Honestly, put him in. You know Sweet. What? Yeah, make the roster like Smash Brothers. Get
Everyone is here.
Yeah, the merchant from Resident Evil 4, the president from Metal Gear Rising Revengeance.
Senator Armstrong?
Yeah, Senator Armstrong's in the game.
Guy fucking rules.
The villain from Tony Hawk's Underground, whose name is escaping me. Okay, this first one is from @these_house on Twitter. And they write, I'm only an hour in and I'm already kind of depressed. 10 out of 10. Great review.
Are they talking about the podcast?
Oh, yeah, I think so. Oops. Yeah, that was an iTunes review, actually. iTunes, Apple Podcasts. What am I saying? I'm 100 years old. They don't call it that no more. This one's from @JPals on Twitter. And they write, pro tip for the game, when you find a makeup kit, interact with it multiple times. 10 out of 10 will definitely clown LeBlanc up again. Do that. I did it, and it's very funny. There's only one time you interact with the makeup kit. You'll know it. It's very funny.
I may have missed this.
Oh, I think I missed it, too.
I don't want to spoil it. I'll tell you guys after.
Okay.
I'll tell you after.
Tell us about.
I guess I could tell you right now and cut it out.
Well, that's more work for you.
Yeah, you're
actually,
right.
more work for Devin.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And we're not doing that. We're not doing that. this stays in. This next one is
now we're making the episode longer. That's more work for Devin.
This next one's from at relatively thick on Twitter.
Great name.
Great. Very good. Thought it was fantastic. Ditchman is one of the most interesting characters I've seen in a while. Ditchman.
We didn't talk about Ditchman,
basically the Bruno of the game. And I never want to meet him again, though. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
Because he's strange, but he's interesting. A lot of interesting, strange people in this game.
I was taken out of the game by some of the Garrett stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It felt a little too modern. Does it make sense? Like, it was a little bit too much.
That.
Like, oh, we're talking about 4chan now. Like, it felt that. But for the most part, most of the other characters are pretty unique and, like, original. And Ditchman's a pretty gross guy.
He's very gross. I like Million, even though.
Million's great.
You learn things about Million. But Million's a great character. Very cool. Interesting.
Cool character design, too. I mean, that's the other thing. Just, like, there's really good portrait art in this. And yeah, just nice little scenelets you're seeing, nice little tableaus.
Million is a robot with like a face made out of stars, almost like a translucent face with lights behind it. Very, really cool.
Very, very cool. This next one is from at PixelPags on Twitter, and they write, been playing and enjoying it for the past week, but also checked out Citizen Sleeper a few days ago, and have been glued to that ever since. So addictive. I will say, while I retroactively missed the voice-acted narration, during gameplay, my brain is so good, I forget it's not. So, they liked the game so much that they didn't even realize that there was an actual voice. Mm. Maybe that Simlish that appears in the game sort of tricks your brain into thinking that you're actually hearing words.
You ever notice when they do like Simlish that you get a real sense of how dumb somebody is based on like the how close their Simlish is to the sound of a tuba?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
If you're in Legend of Zelda and you're talking to an idiot, it's like wah 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 wah.
There's a character in one of the rare games that just like all of their Simlish, all of their gibberish voiceover is just burping. It's so fucking disgusting.
Oh, God.
Fuck that.
Yeah.
You hear a burp, it's kind of funny, but if you keep hearing it, you're like, this guy's sick. Get him out of here.
But by the way, just real quick on that last one, the comparison to Citizen Sleeper, which I think I may have made on the podcast and myself, but like, you know, they're kind of similar ish. They're different games, but they're both like dialogue heavy, text heavy games that are dealing thematically in the same sort of territory. The convergence of tech and capitalism and what that means for our future. And so, they play differently. They're aesthetically very different, but kind of an interesting companion piece. If you like one, you'll probably like the other.
It's in my queue. I've been meaning to check that out. So maybe that's next for me. This last one is from Chunkwater on Twitter, and they write, lovely point and click with smart and interesting, depressingly natural near future vibes. Of course we'll be able to capture and store consciousness, and of course it will be shitty, poorly planned, tamper-friendly, and monetized to hell. And of course we'll unleash sentient AIs with unknowable plans moving us around via task apps and paying us in crypto. I thought that was, a nightmare.
Crypto is great detail.
An absolute nightmare. Chunkwater, you nailed it. And thanks, listeners, for writing into the Ryu crew.
Those are some great reviews.
Yeah, really great.
Some nice little insights.
Very good. Very, I think of all else, the game is thoughtful. So mostly thoughtful, and it garnered thoughtful reviews. So thank you guys.
Yeah, thank you, listeners. You played. We played.
Nick, thank the listeners.
Thank you, listeners. You're welcome, Wagger.
Okay, the one. We got a response.
That was chunk water.
Oh yeah.
I'm glad we all played this game. This was fun to talk about.
Yeah.
And I think it's fun sometimes if we're not all, it's a fun discussion if we're not all 100% on the same page.
And you know, this is We Play You Play, right? So if you played this along with us and you liked it, then great. But if you played it along with us and you didn't like it, welcome to how we did the show before. Every single fucking week.
Follow us on social media at GetPlayedPod. Our music and engineering expert, Devin Bryant. You can follow him on Twitter at BaffleGabs. And check out our premium show, Get Animated. Heather, what are we watching this week?
We're watching Neon Genesis Evangelion. And I think we're on episodes 9 and 10.
That's right.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. I love that show.
It's getting good.
I'm loving it, too.
It's fucking great.
I'm loving it, too. Available on Stitcher Premium or at patreon.com/getplayed. Subscribe and you can get all our episodes we've recorded so far.
Well, guys.
What? Go ahead. What were you going to say, Matt?
I was just going to say, you know. We played. They played. We all got played. And isn't that something?
It is. It is something, Matt. Oi, what are you playing?